A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Celebrating 100 years of radio, 60 years of Nozema, and 10 years of transmissions from our Flevoland shortwave broadcasting site, Radio Netherlands presents a special edition of Sounds Interesting, broadcasting live from the National Museum for Broadcasting on the south side of Hilversum, the Netherlands. Here are your hosts, Jonathan Marks and Jeff Claiborne.
Broadcasting live indeed, Mr. Marks. Nice to see you here this morning.
It's great to be here. It's a lovely, I should say it's a beautiful day. Unfortunately, it's raining outside, to be quite honest.
That would not be true if you said it was a beautiful day. That's right. We're here at the Broadcast Museum on the south side of Hilversum for, three, four, five, six reasons. You count the reasons. We're here for many. One is to commemorate what the new and latest exhibit at the Broadcast Museum is, and that's the 60th anniversary of Nozema in Holland. We'll explain to you what that is in a little while. Also, 10 years of broadcasting shortwave Radio Netherlands from our Flevoland transmission site, and also 100 years of radio. Is that true? Radio is 100 years old?
It depends how you define it. Every country has invented radio. And Holland's claim to fame is that we started the first scheduled broadcast by a guy called Itzada, who operated from The Hague. That was in 1919, so a bit later than that. The 75th anniversary was last year. We say that this year, 100 years of radio, because Marconi put all the bits together. He did the Morse code transmissions. If you go to Russia, they say Popov invented the radio. So it depends on where you are.
100 years for us here in Holland, anyway. We should mention, before we forget, where Robert Chesel is. He is off gallivanting around Scandinavia right now, looking for some good stories for Sounds Interesting, the program you usually hear in this slot, and he'll be back a little later. But in the meantime, we've kind of moved into the Sounds Interesting slot to broadcast from the Broadcast Museum here. Now, we're doing something with ham radio operators, which are in the room behind us, and we'll go back there in a little while. But what is the whole idea of having actual live ham operators here with us?
Well, we thought, how can you illustrate 60 years of Nozema, which is the transmitting company here in the Netherlands that puts us on the air at our Flevo transmitter site? And there's one thing that you want to, you know, you have lots of boxes with old valves inside it, but it's nice to see transmitters actually on the air. The only way to do that in this particular instance is actually do that in the ham radio bands, and at the same time tell people in the ham radio bands a bit about international broadcasting, and at the same time tell people listening at this moment a bit about ham radio, which we'll come to later. But at the moment there are three stations on the air in the room next to us. And in fact, we have some visitors who are wandering around listening to our broadcast too. A bus arrived about half an hour ago with 70 people who are wandering around the exhibition. And what we're doing is seeing whether people can hear us. It's very different to 10 years ago. I'm getting a bit of deja vu when we actually used the Flevoland transmitter site itself and connected a ham radio transmitter to that. We had much bigger antennas then. Today we're using 100 watts, and with the current conditions we're getting out not too badly right across Europe. We'd like to get it down to the Pacific. Maybe it'll improve later on today.
You kind of have set up a high-frequency request line, I guess you might say here. You mentioned weather. Is weather a factor when it comes to the ability to communicate ham or shortwave?
Partly. I mean, we don't recommend that people listen to shortwave radio when there's a thunderstorm going on. Many of the portable receivers are very sensitive to static electricity, and as a result, if you listen during a thunderstorm, maybe your radio will suddenly become deaf. On the other hand, normally, I mean, if it's raining outside or whether it's sunny, it won't make much difference to shortwave radio propagation, because the signals, as they bounce around the Earth, are actually reflecting off a part of the layer of the atmosphere much higher up. It's called the ionosphere. If you listen to our show Media Network on Thursdays, you'll hear our propagation expert, Mike Bird, talk about the weather, and he means the radio weather. In other words, what propagation is like. Earlier today, we called him up to see what the radio weather was going to be like, and I asked him, first of all, of course, what's the sunspot number?
Well, the sunspot number yesterday was 29, and the forecast for today is 32. So that's a lot higher than it has been over the last few weeks.
And what about the geomagnetic field? Because that's pretty important, too.
The Yes, the geomagnetic field yesterday, the planetary A index was 8, which is just into the unsettled threshold. But today the forecast is for 7, which means it's just in the quiet threshold. So really, with a sunspot number of 32 and an AP index of 7, you have ideal solar minimum conditions for shortwave.
And are signals propagating at the moment on the good old shortwave bands?
Yes, they are propagating, actually. They're propagating much better than we thought they would be. We're supposed to be into sunspot minimum and right at the minimum stage at the moment. We're not. We think we've got at least another 6 to 9 months to go.
And what's the weather like in Melbourne at the moment?
The weather today, it's not raining for the first time in 4 days, and the temperature is about 15 degrees, so we can't grumble for the start of winter.
And of course we're grumbling because, in fact, it's 10 degrees at the moment, as you may have heard Grant Coben say earlier in the transmission. It's raining outside and it's supposed to be summer, but never mind.
I've heard people say that the Netherlands always gets all the weather that the UK doesn't want.
Indeed, it's usually a westerly wind, you're dead right.
We should mention while we're here at the Broadcast Museum a little bit about it. And standing right here with us is Jan Voss with the Ulm Rope Museum here in Hilversum. How long has this museum been around?
In this building, 2 years now. And in another place, we started in 1982.
Hilversum would seem to make sense for a place to put a broadcasting museum. This town is often referred to as the Hollywood of Holland, because broadcast business is pretty much centered here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started here in first with a seintoestellenfabriek. How do you...
Morse code. I mean, yeah. What happened was after the Second World War, Marconi were the people who were producing a lot of the equipment in those days. That was a British company. And they wouldn't deliver to the Dutch maritime fleet. So Holland naturally started its own company, the Dutch Morse code company, if you actually translate it literally. And they started selling, obviously, to the Dutch market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, after some time, every ship, every vessel had his Morse code installation, and then they started to make radio, but they didn't know too much about marketing, so when they started to make radio, afterwards they thought that if you buy a radio, a wireless set, then there must be first something to hear on it. And the chief seller of the Marconi factory became the first program leader of the HDO, the Hilversumse Draadloze Omroep. And with the HDO, the Hilversum started.
Every broadcast, every country has its own broadcast history, more or less. Holland's pretty well spelled out here in this museum, which is kind of an interactive museum as well. There's a chance for some hands-on stuff that probably means a lot, particularly to Dutch people who grew up with Dutch radio and Dutch television.
Dutch television, for example, we caught 75 fragments of what we call the highlights of television. And you can see them by pressing some buttons.
When I was here about a week ago, you were telling me about a system you have here. If my father was on the evening news 7 years ago, you might be able to swing it so I could come here and watch that.
Yeah. If your father was 10 years ago on television and you failed to have your cassette recorder ready, you can still see that fragment over here. So we go to the archives and get it for you.
There's two things that you see over and over and over again as you walk through the museum, and one is the name Philips, which only makes sense, and the other is Radio Netherlands, or Vilden Roep, were a big part of the broadcast history in Holland.
Yeah. Well, Philips started with the first broadcastings to the Dutch Indians, India colonies, and after World War II, that became Radio Nederland World Service.
Yeah. Now, the new exhibit here is about the Nozema, which to people who don't live in Holland, and quite frankly, Jonathan, to a lot of people who do live in Holland, doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, indeed. It means the Dutch Transmitting Company, if you translate it literally. They are the people who actually put our programs on the air. And that means to say that they They have their high-power transmitters. They take the programs that we make, and we feed them down the landline off the go on the air.
And part of the reason that the exhibit is here is because Nozema is celebrating 60 years of being in business, of doing business with broadcasters in Holland. A little bit earlier, I had a chance to talk to Arnold Veltins here at the Broadcast Museum, who gave me a sort of a VIP tour of the Nozema exhibit that's on display now, and sort of a feel for why Nozema's 60th birthday is so important here.
So Dutch broadcasters are busy celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Nozema and its six decades of contributions to the business of moving information to the masses. But what exactly is the Nozema? Well, to answer that, you must first understand the history of broadcasting itself in Holland. Arnold Veltins is in charge of the Broadcast Museum's latest exhibit on the Nozema. He says the broadcasting hierarchy in Holland is a bit different from most countries.
Well, at first I have to tell you something about the specific broadcasting companies here in Holland too. It has nothing to do with the state, like in England, for instance, BBC or whatever. In the 20s, there were several parties, either on religious or on political background, who got a permit for transmission. So this is the situation at the moment. We have the several, say, old broadcasting companies here, like KRO, the VPRO, the NCRV, the AVRO. And since a while, you can say the last 10 years, there's also a possibility for commercial radio and television. But that's a whole new development. And for all these facilities, transmission, the Nozema, they make the equipment and all the transmitters and the transmitting stations are property of the Nozema.
In other words, the Nozema enjoyed decades of a downright monopoly for most of its reign as the only source for getting the stuff you needed to broadcast. The Nozema stumbled during the war years, but it did get its start several years before war spread across Europe and into Holland.
It started already before the Second World War in Lopik. It only took them a long time because of the Second World War and the difficulties at that time. For the facilities. To give you some impression, here we have an original object from the 50s used in the transmitter hall of Lopik, and it's a selector for the antennas.
Looks like something from a bad science fiction movie.
Yeah, sort of Star Trek. we have some documents. There were, when they founded the Nozema 60 years ago, there were also shares. I'm not exactly familiar with the details about how much the Dutch state, I guess it was 50-50, but I'm not sure about that. 50% for the Dutch state and 50% for the broadcasting companies. And later on, the Wereldomroep joined them, but that was after the Second World War.
Without getting too technical, in order to be a broadcaster, you first have to find a place from which to broadcast. The Nozema was there to set up the studios. And second, find a place to put the stick, as insiders might say, a place to transmit the signal, as in towers and antennas. That also the business of Nozema. Turns out Holland was ideal geographically for originating short and medium-wave broadcasting.
What would be the prerequisites? What would make a site ideal for locating the broadcasting facility?
Yeah, it has to be flat. And, of course, Holland is flat. Only the south, there are some hills, some slopes. But, of course, of the everybody knows Holland is a very small country with, say, 50 million people already. And you have to house them. And they don't have only houses with gardens. There are also huge offices and so on. And this will always give some trouble for transmitting. So at first they thought rural surroundings, that might be the best thing. So where cows were...
But land is a real premium, as you said, in this country. Yes. So it was a big investment.
It was a big investment, but at that time, of course, we're speaking about the the end of the 1930 and the beginning of the 50s. Situation was a bit different than it is now, of course.
And this might be a good time to explain exactly what Nozema means. It may sound like a face cream, but it's really nothing more than an abbreviation.
It's an abbreviation of Nederlandse Omroepzendermaatschappij.
Which means Dutch Broadcasting...
Broadcasting Transmission Company.
Things have changed considerably in recent years for the Nozema, what with the introduction of commercial broadcasting in Holland and the eventual demise of its monopoly. But Arno Veltins says Nozema is looking for and finding new niches as it heads into the next century. New ways to move information from point A to point B. For example, Nozema is now among the leaders in developing what is called data casting.
All the, spare frequency used for transmitting television, you can use for several other purposes. What you can do with it is, for instance, we have here a personal computer, and it's for disabled people. As you see on the screen, you see a newspaper, and there's a voice, a sort of robot voice next to it, which will tell you the news for today, a sort of reading the newspaper. It's not only in sentences, you can pick also a word out of it, you could also spell the word, for instance.
And a whole bunch of other things that can use this, what's called data broadcasting, and I don't think you or I, either one, could sit down and explain in the short amount of time we have here exactly what it is, but basically if I'm at home watching Grace Under Fire or, you know, the evening news or something, on my television there's a whole lot more room for information on that signal that's coming into my house?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. For instance, the Dutch railway, the Nederlandse Spoorwegen, they use it. If there's a delay for trains, they could send this message to every station around in the, and they don't use a fax anymore. They use this data casting, for instance.
Arno, what do you think people are going to get from this particular exhibit that you've got here?
Well, it's a bit complicated. I mean, at first I thought this is such a technical story to tell for the average museum visitor, that I was a bit afraid they didn't thought it might be interesting. But as soon as the equipment arrived. And of course, there's lots of explaining on the text boards and on the photos. Of course, it's also a very recognizable piece of documentation for people. I think it will be interesting, even for for a housewife, whatever. They will pick as in a sort of menu. They will pick. Out which they find interesting.
This is AM Radio, where active minds get involved and interact.
And via satellite and via shortwave and via carrier pigeon and via ham radio today.
We should say hi to people listening to us on the Astra satellite, because this transmission is also going out on the Astra satellite to Europe. Primarily, of course, we're broadcasting at the moment to the Far East and Australasia. We had got a bit of reaction to the first transmission that we had live earlier on today. One thing we should also mention is the new technology, because you say, okay, we're up on satellite, we're also up on the internet. And maybe I should give out our internet address.
Our internet address and how folks can see our homepage. If you recognize that buzzword, then you'll know what the following gibberish means as well.
Yeah, there are actually two things. There are about 30 million people around the world who have access to the internet, and that basically means a sort of electronic highway. That means to say they can send electronic messages. Rather than putting it in the post, they can actually send it directly, and we get them then within milliseconds of them sending the message. The electronic address for that is letters, the @ rnw.nl. About 4 million people are more fortunate. They're able to hear, or they're able rather to access the so-called World Wide Web pages. And if you've never seen that, it's a bit like watching a slideshow on your television. You can see pages and you can call up and you can very easily move, for example, from pages that we've put up to pages that Deutsche Welle have made and whatever. So-called URL code, that's the sort of magic stuff that you need for the internet, is as follows. It's http://www.rnw.nl/RNW. It's all very complicated, isn't it? But if you use the internet, you know what it means. One other thing I think we should mention is that quite a few people have been calling our continuity at the moment, asking for the frequencies of the ham radio station that we're going to go to in a few seconds. If you're interested, and because you can't listen to us later today because of our transmissions going off the air, at least to the Pacific, let me give you the telephone number of the museum here. And if you really want to give us a call, not collect, please, but here's the number. It's 31 for Holland, 358858. I'll give that once again. 31 for Holland, 358858.
And if I'm not mistaken, we do still open plain old mail and look at it too, don't we?
Oh, that's very important to mention. I mean, just because we're using modern technology doesn't mean to say that the old technology has died.
The internet, if the definition of broadcasting is moving information from point A to point B, then I guess it would fall into that category. But it's also kind of a gray area, isn't it? Do we still consider internet broadcast or media access?
I think lawyers are working on that because, yes, if you put something up on the internet and somebody logs onto it, is that broadcasting? Is that narrowcasting? Or is it so-called audio on demand? Because you don't start feeding the audio into the internet until somebody actually logs on. It's a very gray area, you bet.
Let's move on to something that's been around a whole lot longer than the internet, but in many ways has a lot in common with the internet, and that's talking with people all around the world, perhaps with never even knowing their name or seeing their face, and that's the hobby or the profession in many cases of ham radio.
Indeed, and what we're doing in this particular room, because we've gradually been dragging all the cables with us, to a room where we have, in fact, four receiver sitting in front of us. One of them is actually listening to the Astra satellite subcarrier that we're listening to at the moment. Maybe we can just turn it up and see if we can make it the world's largest PA system.
Yes.
Maybe you can hear there's an echo because that's coming off the satellite. Right, so we've proved that we're actually on the air live. But that's one part of the operation. And with us too is Rokas de Jode, who's the guy in our frequency division, who's actually made sure that we're also active on the ham radio bands.
That's correct, Jonathan. Right now we are active on three ham radio bands. The 2 meters band, which is for local, and the 70 centimeter band, which is VHF and UHF for local traffic. And we have also an HF, high frequency shortwave station on the air, which is operating right now on, I think, the 20 meter band. And this way we're trying to transmit to ham radio operators, at least in the whole of Europe right now.
Have we had great success so far today?
Yes, we had contacts with Ireland, even with Sarajevo and several other stations in Europe. So it's bad weather upstairs, and we had some difficulties with our HF antenna, but we're doing a fine job right now.
A part of ham radioism is trying to collect cards that prove that you've talked to somebody. If anybody does do that with us today, we have something special too, right?
Yes, these are the verification cards. Normally when ham radio operators talk to each other, they confirm their QSO, their transmissions, by sending each other verification cards. In short, we call it a QSL card. And this way you can collect a lot of QSL cards and show to other people. And for this special station we have put up right now, which has the call sign Papa Alpha 6 Radio November Whiskey, which is, of course, Radio Nederland Wereldroep, our station name, we will send to every ham radio operator a QSL card. And if they operate with our ham radio station, we send them a card, and on the other side, we will also make a QSL card, and ham radio operators have to log one of our shortwave transmissions of Radio Netherlands on shortwave. So this is a kind of a very special QSL card we can offer them.
Right. If you're interested in sending us a reception report, let me give you the details of what you need to send us. You need to grab a piece of paper, write down your name and address, very important, otherwise we don't know who's sending it. The date, of course, is the 10th of June, write that down. The time in UTC or Greenwich Mean Time, the frequency that you were listening to our broadcasts on, some program details to confirm that you really did so, and details about the receiver and antenna, and, of course, very important, what was the signal strength like? I mean, was it good, bad, or what? So, of course, we hope, fingers crossed, as you heard heard from Mike Bird, the propagation isn't too bad. Earlier today, it was very difficult getting out of Europe at all. But as we're gradually grabbing all these cables here, good old wireless.
Looks like Alex here is talking to somebody. Have you reached somebody here?
Het rapport hier is 5-9, Ger, en de naam...
He's talking in Dutch. He's got a local guy there. Let's just move further down.
This would be the high-frequency radio, which basically reaches, well, the world.
And the frequency that we're operating on is actually 14202. We can actually see now the frequency display on the readout.
Can we listen to some of this here?
Alpha Oscar Golf. This is Papa Alpha 6, Radio November Whiskey. Papa Alpha 6, Radio November Whiskey. That you copy. Golf 4, Alpha Oscar Golf, PA 6, RNW.
So we are reaching, we'll find out in a minute who that is, but I have a question for you, Jonathan. Why does it kind of have that Donald Duck sound of the voice on the shortwave radio?
Well, because they're using a system called single sideband. It's actually very spectrum efficient. In other words, it takes up less space on the dial. Remember, ham radio operators have to use very narrow parts of the radio spectrum. The more signals they can squeeze in, the better. And therefore, they adopted and developed, actually, the single sideband method of communication, which is, in fact, more effective and more efficient than AM. Only problem is, of course, you need a special radio. And because we're using voice communication, it doesn't really matter that the pitch isn't perfectly correct. Of course, it does matter if you listen to ordinary broadcasts with music, because listening to a concert in single sideband would be pretty awful.
We talked just a minute ago about the internet and being on the satellite and being able to pick up a lot of things on FM and medium wave and AM now. But still we're in a room with ham radio operators. Is this becoming technology passé, or is there a future for ham radio?
There are 15,000 ham radio operators in the Netherlands. I think the number of amateur radio operators is pretty constant. It is true, though, that things are changing. It used to be very much so that you built your own equipment. And the thrill was, you know, just built your own transmitter, go on the air. And many of the first transmission was simply testing it. You know, how far I've just built this new design, how far does it go? I think a lot of the experimental stuff now is in more the software side. People are getting into computers, they are experimenting with trying to send television pictures over shortwave and cleaning them all up because of the reception and so forth. So it's moving, I think, more into the software side. The idea that people go and build their own radios, I think, is getting a bit passé. It also applies to, look at the old days in 1950s when we had a program called DX Jukebox, which used to encourage people to build their own equipment. Nowadays, of course, we don't ask them to build their own radio, but we do hopefully give them interesting software, i.e. programs, to listen to.
Who is the ham radio operator? What kind of person is this?
Good question. I myself am a ham radio operator. My call sign is Papa Alpha 3 Bravo November Mike. And yeah, there are 15, as Jonathan said, 15,000 ham radio operators about in Holland. And they're not special. Everybody can be a ham radio operator. You have to have a license from the Dutch Ministry or the Department of Transport and Industry. And well, I regard myself as rather normal, but it's a kind of it's a very nice hobby, talking to people all over the world.
It's sharing experiences. That's what it is. I mean, a lot of people say, "Oh, it's a bunch of freaks." I don't like the word freak. I do like the word specialist. These are people who are interested in communicating across the other sides of the world. And we now have the technology to do it via shortwave, via satellite, all sorts of things. I still think there's a lot to be learned in terms of trying to communicate and trying to develop things. And you can't say that, you know, everything's been developed in the 1920s and all we're doing is now using it like portable telephones.
But a ham radio will always have a role in what we talked about earlier as a crisis media.
First thing that happens when there's an earthquake, or even, for example, during the floods in the Netherlands earlier this year, when communities and houses were cut off, people who ham radio operators, I mean, I was listening on the VHF bands. In fact, we've actually also got a QSL card that Rokas is handing to me from Croatia. I mean, what happens when the communications infrastructure breaks down? Well, people turn to ham radio.
What if I told you, Jokas, that we had just a few seconds left to tell people where to call us on the short or the ham radio if they wanted to? How do they get a hold of our ham radio operators here?
Okay, the best thing to do if they live in the Netherlands, first, it's on 2 meters, 145.450. And the other frequencies on HF are 7070 lower sideband and around 14.200 kilohertz on the 20 meter band.
We're on 14202 at the moment.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.